I'm Kathy, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Kathy.
And I'd like to thank the program from... I'd like to thank the program for allowing me to share on this topic. Still can't hear me? Searching for love in all the wrong places. Is that the topic? When my friend asked me to share on this topic, can you hear me? Is that better?
Yeah.
That's better. Searching for love in all the wrong places. When my friend asked me to share on this topic, and I told some other friends that I should share on this topic, they said, you are the right person. And that I would do fine. I don't know what to begin to share, but a lot of things that kept going through my mind is, you know, I'm a retread. You know, I was introduced to this room in 88 through driving while intoxicated. And within a short amount of time, I end up with 3 charges, and the last charge was habitual offender. And Fairfax County, anytime you get a charge, you're going to jail or you're going to do a kind of program. They give you choices, but, you know, the one I eventually chose was Crossroads, a long-term program. So I have been through all kinds of programs, inpatient, outpatient, and things like that. And each time I would learn more about this addiction. And that each time I would go back out, that I would get a refund of all the things that I did, and that this is a progressive disease, and it wants my life. And at that time, I knew I was an alcoholic, you know, because my father drank, my mother drank, their family drank. So identifying in with that part, it wasn't a problem. It was just, what was I going to do to stop it? You know, because I was an addict. You know, I used drugs. And my father had stopped, and he's an alcoholic, and he stopped, and, you know, that's what all I had to do was just stop. But it didn't work that way for me. I needed help. And so going into treatment centers, I realized all the pain that I was in, you know, and that I couldn't do this by myself. You know, that I couldn't do this by myself. And I blamed my family. You know, a lot of it was a blame. I blamed my family for my addiction, you know, and all the problems that I had, I blamed my family. And I'm losing my focus here, but just tell the truth. So the solution for me was to get my life together so that I can get this relationship back with the father of my child, and that I could be that mother that I wanted to be, because I couldn't be that mother, you know, using drugs. I'm losing my But I would like to talk about when I went through Crossroads. It was a long-term program, and it got me on the road of recovery. You know, when I went into that program, I knew that I had made a decision to just stop using. I became very willing because I was really broken down. You know, I used alcohol, I used PCP, I used crack. And the life that I had lived was not the life that I thought that, you know, was best for me, you know, that eventually I would just die, you know, because of the institutions I had that, you know, jail, I went to jail, and death was the next thing, the solution, and I had to get some help. And when I went in there, I knew that I couldn't be there with a relationship. I knew that the relationship with the father was over. You know, there was no relationship out there that I was attached to, so it wasn't about completing this program and getting a relationship with somebody after I completed it. So I was very willing and humble and got in touch with the fact that I'm an alcoholic, that I'm very ashamed of it. There's a lot of addict that there's a lot of pain that I had to deal with and I had to face. And a lot of it, you know, I look at it, I'm so angry. and so sad, you know, that I didn't get a chance to be with the father of my child, you know, because my parents are still together today. And at that time, my parents, you know, they did the parent thing. They took care of my child. You know, my mother brought my child up to the treatment facility every time she was supposed to bring my child. You know, my mother was the kind of mother that was always there for me. You know, my mother and father, their relationship, I mean, I look at it, and I have chosen men just like my father, you know. I would look for men that would be the supplier, you know. My father was the kind of guy that well-educated and excelled, and my mother's the housewife that, you know, stayed at home and all that stuff, you know. Before I'm the youngest of four girls, and when I came along at the end, my father had stopped drinking, so I missed out on all the physical abuse. You know, basically, I remember being 5 years old and seeing my parents fight. And throughout that whole time growing up, I always had that feeling, that fear that they were going to fight, you know. And it was more abusive, you know. The relationship my parents had, you know, that emotional unavailability. I remember I always sought for attention from him. And he's the kind of guy that when he came home, he went upstairs and read. And I wanted his attention. And that's what I missed out on, that attention I wanted from my father that I sought through other guys to get, you know. And when I think about everything that I did using, and I came up in these rooms to get clean, the same person was there. You know, that first year in recovery, you know, I was in an institution. But that second year, as soon as I had smelt freedom, I got in a relationship. You know, I got in a relationship with somebody I met early in the program. And we went through it for a year and a half. And he was telling me, hey, let's be friends. And when the relationship ended, you know, I remember crying like a baby because I knew it was over. And he admitted to me that he had messed around, and that broke, you know, broke my heart, right? So, but I moved on to the next person. You know, I moved on to the next situation. And then I realized after a while, I have a daughter, and I have to raise my daughter. And I remember her saying to me, basically she didn't directly say it, but she said, Mom, you have been with so many different guys. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, I have to do something different. And it was only through a process of letting people in my life and sharing exactly what's going on that things got better for me as a person. You know, and I left out that relationship and eventually got in another relationship. And this person eventually became a member of this program, you know, and that was a different kind of situation. You know, being in a relationship with somebody, you know, they told me, don't get in a relationship with people, you know, that drink or do drugs. But I thought I could handle it, you know, because I had more time. And I remember when that relationship broke up that eventually I had to get outside help because I was emotionally a wreck because I was in a relationship with someone. They eventually came in these rooms, and I had to let step back and let the rooms help him, and they did, you know. And I have a gratitude because he's still in these rooms, and he's clean and sober, and he's gone on with his life. And I've seen him at the convention, and when I saw him, you know, I had this feeling like, I'm so glad that you're here, you know, that I have moved on too. You know how when you break up and you see the person, you go through so many feelings. You know, and the thing about that I also want to share is that just that low self-esteem, you know, because in treatment I found out I got the unresolved issues of my family, and I have low self-esteem, and I'm unmanageable, I'm unorganized, I'm a procrastinator, you know, and I realized there's a lot of things I need to work on about myself. And going back to school was one thing, you know. Stop smoking was the one thing, you know. I remember my daughter, she's like, I can't stand it that you smoke, you know. And eventually I stopped smoking, you know. And I haven't you know, had a cigarette in a while, you know. But the tools that I use to keep me clean is my sponsor. You know, the step, it took me a very, very long time to get into the step work. A very long time to really get into step work, because I think I had about six years or 7 years clean before I did my four step. And I really felt bad about that, because it's like, you in these rooms, you go to meetings, things like that, and you haven't completed your step work. You know, I felt really ashamed about that. But, you know, I've seen a lot of people go back out, and it's because they didn't do their step work or whatever. And, you know, I'm going at my own pace. It's a self-help program, and I'm going at my own pace, you know. And I've seen people go out and did all the steps, too, you know. And and when I got up in here, I followed the suggestions, you know, stick with the women. You know, it's good to see a lot of women in here, because you go to meetings, and there aren't many women there, you know. And why, I wonder, you know. And I like to say is because we have a lot, some of us have a lot of responsibility. And it's easier for a man just to say, I'm going to meet, you know, and do his thing. But a woman, me, I have a daughter. I used to take my daughter to meetings. She's old enough, she's 14 years old, and she don't have to go to meetings with me, you know. And I think about my daughter, you know, when I started using, I was 13. And I used the alcohol and marijuana, and it wasn't until high school that I picked up again, you know, because we did that geographical cure, we moved. My father's like, you're not going to drink? I mean, not drink, but you're not going to smoke cigarettes. Because I started smoking when I was 13. But getting back to the program, I have a lot of gratitude because I let people in my life today. You know, I tell people what's going on. You know, the women, you know, stick with the women. You know, when I first got here, that first couple years, I started a women's rap. And it helped me keep focused. It gave me a place to go share what was going on. You know, it's hard to be in a room and be in a relationship with somebody in the rooms, and you're going through problems, you know, and that trust thing, you know, that real trust thing, you know, that's the hardest part too. Because when people start talking about you, and or your relationship's over, you start saying, I'm not going to that meeting anymore, you know, and I've seen women do it, you know, they go to meetings and the relationship broke up, and it gave me strength when I was going through that, that I'm going to continue to go to the meetings, that I'm not going to go back out and use, because really that's what I wanted to do. When those relationships ended, I wanted to use, you know. This last one that I went through, oh, now that I wanted to use, it was more or less, what is it I'm going to have to deal with now? You know, having to face myself. You know, the step work has helped me take a look at myself, you know, and look at the steps that the mistakes I made. You know, why is it that when I get in a relationship, 3 weeks down the road, I'm having sex? You know?
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
You don't.
3 weeks.
You.
On the road, I'm having sex, and I really couldn't tell you anything about the guy, because when I was using, it didn't matter, you know. I used protection sometimes, and sometimes I didn't, you know. And then afterwards, I would go home, going to the doctor to find out what's wrong with me, you know what I'm saying? And the having to go through that wasn't cool at all. And to do the same thing in recovery, you know, get with somebody, and a couple weeks later I'm in the bed with them having unprotected sex, wanting to know why he's leaving me or it's over, you know, for whatever reason. Because I really didn't give myself a chance to get to know the guy, You know, and the guy that really, really liked me and one who knows me and care about me, I don't got time for him. Because I go for the one, you know, that look good, smell good, talk good. You know, and I think he's the one. I heard people sharing about that. Because when I do that, I'm thinking we're going to get married. Because I'm that's the ultimate right there. Well, I'm not just getting in bed with you just because I want to get feel good. You know, that's not the purpose of it. It's to have a relationship, you know, to get married and all that, you know. Because I'm going to fall in love with you, and you're going to fall in love with me, and we're going to be a happy family. You know what I'm saying? I mean, as a result, you know, I've been a special friend to people, you know, a special friend.
Yeah.
You know, and but the real deal is that when you're in a relationship and you break up, no, let me back up, is when you end the relationship and you have an unprotected sex and I end up pregnant. And then it comes down to, well, who is the daddy? Because, see, I was also having sex with somebody else. You know? I like to say that's why I'm here, because with my daughter, that was the issue. I told the father after I plopped the baby out that I think it might be your cousin. And when that happened, I went back home to my family. And eventually, 11 years later, we took the blood test. But during that whole process, it was like, that just might not be my baby. You know, even though the ears were like his, she walked like him. She was just my skin color. And the nose, you know, I can go on and on. But to him, for as far as he was concerned, that was not his child. And even after the first blood test, you know, we took two blood tests. But the first one, he said it wasn't his, too. Because I had to go to the Division of Child Support through that avenue. Because I was hoping that eventually he might just, you know, start paying some child support, just help out. But during that whole time, I kept my daughter in relationship with his family. You know, I feel blessed that he has a family that is, you know, spiritually conscious, and that they are good to my daughter. You know what I'm saying? And if it wasn't for them, you know, my daughter, you know, might not be in a better spot, you know, but we have a relationship with him because he does not live here. But that was the biggest issue. And once that was resolved, you know, guess what? I could get on with my life. Once that was resolved, I could love my daughter because I was very angry and hurt and full of a lot of pain because it didn't work out. You know, I could not love my daughter the way she needed to be loved because I was so angry. You know what I mean? I had to hear somebody share that they did not love their child or could not love their child to be able to share that. You know, this is what this room has helped me to take a look at. You know, just because, you know, he wasn't, or I'm thinking in my mind that he wasn't going to do this and this and that, or the fact that I did not know the truth. You know, even though the test told me, all that time, in the back of my head, I was like, I wonder if he could be right, you know, that that's not his child. And what am I going to do, you know? And, you know, since I've been clean, I had two abortions. And the first one was when I was 16. You know, of course, my family didn't know about that. I don't have a relationship with them. You know, that first one, I was 16. And after I had it, I was like, see you. You know what I mean? I just said, see you. I was 16. Now I shouldn't be having no baby. The second one was when I was using. And the third one was in these rooms, you know. I was messing around with one guy and then another guy. Because, see, I still was still using my body to get things. You know, I was still using my body to get things, you know. And I wasn't the kind of person I mean, once I think about it, I mean, I wasn't the kind of person that, you know, hey, you're going to do it and you're going to give me something. I'll try to be slick about it. And as a result, I didn't get nothing. You know? So, I had that other one under the same deal, you know, I didn't know who the father was. And the last one, you know, I still go through a lot of feelings about it, because the last one, I was like, I have to be under. I can't be conscious. I can't be conscious because I can't go through that pain that I went through. You know what I'm saying? I can't go through that pain because, you know, I'm in recovery. I should be in a better space. I should have this child no matter what. But it was under those same thoughts. I don't want to be with somebody that I don't love or doesn't love me. Because really, I don't love myself, you know. I'm learning how to love myself, you know, because it's that low self-esteem, not feeling good about myself. You know, how I'm going to put myself back together when my whole world's falling apart. Learning how to reach out and ask for help, you know, tell people what's going on, and they say, you're going to be okay. You know, you're going to be okay. Because when I go through a lot of changes, moving, stuff like that, I'm so vulnerable. You know, I want to feel good. You know, I just don't even like being at home with the, I'm a person that's on the phone from the time I walk in to the time I go to sleep. I used to be like that. I'm still like that, but not as much, you know, because I have things I got to do. You know, but the last one, you know, it was the same situation, you know. It's like, who could the daddy be, you know? And I knew who the daddy was, but it's because the guy was like, well, remember when I met you, you know, you said you had sex with somebody. And, you know, 4 months down the road, I was pregnant. So in my mind, because I've gone through this crazy thinking, I was like, he could be right. But at the same, I knew I did not want to be with somebody that I just met. You know, I did not want to have a baby by somebody that I just met. And I feel that if I was in a better place spiritually, I would have had that baby no matter what. You know what I'm saying? But you know, as a result, you know, we're not together today. And I'm still trying to mend myself from that experience, you know. And it's like, don't put myself in that situation again. You know, it's hard sometimes to get yourself out of the mood, you know, because I'm a feeling person. And it's the blessing of this program, because for real, I did not want to be here. I didn't want to get a sponsor. I didn't want to go to meetings regular. I didn't want to believe what this program had to offer me. But when I started doing the step work and have a sponsor that I can call, who, you know, would give me information I need to hear, things got a lot better, even for my daughter. You know, we lived together, the thing was, you know, I didn't want to have that situation continue to happen where her mother have these relationships and the man stay overnight, and it's like, don't come knock on my door. You know what I'm saying? But it's not like that today. You know, it's not like that today, you know. And I have a lot of gratitude, you know, for that, for the program. And I say for the newcomers, you know, this thing will get better. You know, it will get better. Just stick with the women, you know, and deal with how you feeling, what's really going on with you, you know, because sometimes, a lot of times, I'm not honest with myself because I really like to live in a fantasy world, you know, a fantasy world, and I have people in my life to say, no, it's not like that, Kathy. You know, I have to be honest and tell people what's going on and listen to them and listen for the truth, because I like to believe my information. But I have people in my life that say, nope, that is not the deal. You know, I remember my friend was telling me, you are the other woman. You know, and I had a problem, you know. I was in a relationship with the guy, and eventually he got back with somebody, and I became the other woman. And when I heard that, internalized it, I was okay. But when I heard it, I didn't accept it very well. And I know it's a feeling disease, and when I don't, it deals with me. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to thank everybody again for letting me share.
Thanks, Kathy. Now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Saladin.
All right.
Saladin.
I'm Saladin. I'm an addict. And I thank God for the opportunity to be here clean one day at a time. And not just clean, but recovering. And I know today is a difference between the two. And I was sitting there and just kind of thinking. And I was thinking back to this morning when my brother did the meeting upstairs on is recovery enough or is being clean enough. And he kind of revealed to the people that the program is a setup. Well, I'm going to go a step farther. This meeting, this topic for Saladin is a setup. And I know that. You know. I want to thank first the program committee. I also want to thank my sponsor, because he has been vital in me kind of involving myself in this process as it relates to this topic. You know, searching for love in all the wrong places. I think they used to use the topic looking for love. Searching kind of implies some desperation. And I'm going to do the best I can to take my time. And I know I want to thank the members of my home group. We recover every Saturday morning at 11:30 over on 24th Place in Northeast D.C., a men's wrap. Also in that same building is a step meeting and a dynamite women's wrap. You know, we recover and we love each other as best we can. We don't always get it right. You know, so I just want to say thank you to them. And I just want to thank my higher power, man, because this is truly a blessing. Searching for love in all the wrong places. Very simply, I'm an addict. And I was thinking, man, that we are some very strange people. Because what we do, egotism being one of my most glaring defects, we inadvertently make people celebrities in an anonymous program. And for my own good, you know, I cannot afford to let anybody at this convention get me high. You know, I want to share for the newcomer because it's a lot of our members that work in the field, our ninth tradition, and they as such are to remain forever non-professional. But our service board, our service committees or whatever may employ special workers. I am not the counselor. I don't have no letters behind my name. I'm just one addict, trying not to use one day at a time. And if I let you trick me into forgetting that, I can go from doing your intake to you doing my intake. This topic is good for me because I think a lot of the members kind of showed up thinking they was going to hear a long, drawn-out picture of my sexual experiences. I mean, if we're going to tell the truth. And if you hold still, you might get that. But for the safety of the members in the room, we're going to withhold all names and any pictures. And anonymity being the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Meaning if I can't come here, tell the truth about me and the safety of this meeting, then the addict gonna die. And I got to live and enjoy life, like the sister said last night. I grew up in Washington, D.C., up on Emerson Street, Northwest, big house on the corner. About three or four Muslim families lived in that house. We used to get up 5 o'clock in the morning, point to the east and pray. What, no pork, no pork chops, no bacon, no neck bones in the ribs. And if you got out of hand, one of the ways that they would show me how they cared for me was down on my knees in the corner with the belt to my behind. Now, somehow, as a young child, I didn't think that registered as love. Now, I would watch the same people, spiritual people, leave that house around midnight or so and go sell dope up on 9th Street. Now, I didn't know a lot about God early on, but I knew God and dope did not belong in the same picture. As a result of that, and I just want to kind of set this up, because I came in here under the illusion that if I could just manage to stop hitting the pipe, you know, I had totally missed that the first step said addiction. You know, that y'all told me that my disease would manifest itself in a variety, you know. So I ended up watching my father go to jail. From my father's situation over in Northwest, I went over to Southeast to my grandmother's house. And like most grandparents from South Carolina, she is Southern Baptist. Meaning she ain't cooking it unless it got pork in it. So I was confused from the outset. I'm here to also report that you cannot have confusion and love in the same place at the same time. So I was set up from the beginning. You know, no feeling of acceptance. All the people that I thought should have been there to love me were gone. You know, I used a very immature way of thinking, and I tricked myself into believing that it was the truth. Because the reality is, when I got here, y'all told me about the footprints in the sand. And y'all explained to me that the one thing I had been looking for, searching for, hungering for the whole time never left me. I just misunderstood something along the way. I kind of thought that if I could just get close enough to people on the outside, then it would fill a hole on the inside. So I end up at my grandmother's house. I'm playing in the alley in the dirt like most little boys do. And the new kids ride up on their new bikes and they say, "Man, what's your name?" And I said, "Man, my name is Saladin Ali. Malik." And he looked and he said, "Sala who?" And right there, any kind of love I had for myself, any kind of love I thought I deserved from other people, left. I started from right there, searching for love in all the wrong places. Now, I want to share this, right, because I think one of the worst things, because the newcomer needs to know that this search is vital to your recovery. This is the backbone of my recovery. This search. And I think the worst thing that can be done in the rooms is to spend time trying to avoid the process. Because you're going to get beat over your head during this search. You're going to get ridiculed during this search. You're going to have to hear people say, "Man, he been clean for 7 years. He ain't worked on that yet. Don't he know that sleeping around don't work no more?" But I'm here to report the same powerlessness that was in the crack house is inside this process. And I can relate to everything you shared. I took off from there, man. Because the thing that I was looking so hard for, I was scared to accept it. Y'all told me that self-centered fear was at the core of my disease. Meaning as bad as I wanted it, as much as you tried to give it, I would be too scared to receive it. And see, I'll change seats on the Titanic and play the blame game. Don't you understand what I done been through? Where I come from? So I looked up, and it was time to start first day at a new school. And I was always adventurous, because a new homeroom meant new people, and it meant another new adventure in terms of who I was. Because they would do the name, the roll call, and they would say, "Is Bob here?" And Bob would say, "Present." They say, "Well, is Gary here?" Gary would stand all up, "Present." So they say, "Well, is Cheryl here?" Cheryl would, "Here, I'm here." And she would work her way down. And she would get to the paper, and she would go, "Is," and I would start to sink down in my chair, consumed with shame and guilt for some stuff that wasn't even mine. So with that frame of mind, there's no way I'm going to find what I'm looking for. I'm here to report, man, that the one thing that I thought avoided me the most, it was sort of like having a pair of shades and losing them. And walking all around, "Have you seen my shades? Has anybody seen my shades?" And then somebody got to tap you and say, "They on the top of your head." I started to feel like I had to protect myself, because everybody close to me that's supposed to love me hurt me. So I started fighting, you know, as a way to gain acceptance, as a way to not deal. And I turned out to be pretty good at it, you know, because being this small, this fine with such a funny name will get you in trouble. So some years went by, man, and a guy came up to me. And I said, "Man, where you get them new tennis shoes from?" He said, "Man, you really want to know where I got these tennis shoes from?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Man, I'll meet you tomorrow." That was one of the most important questions I ever asked somebody. He came back the next day. He took me up to 51st and E Street, Southeast. All my boat smokers know that's Eastgate Gardens upon me. Gary, my man. And what he told me was that he stood on this corner and he sold PCP and he got him a new pair of tennis shoes. So I said, "I can handle that." The fear hadn't gone nowhere. But I just hadn't seen what the consequences for the actions was yet. So I took the drugs and I stood out there and the police was running around and the dope fiends was running around and people was hooping and hollering. And all of that fear that consumed me in the alley behind my grandmother's house came back. So I asked him what I know today is probably the second most important question. I said, "Man, what do you do when you get scared?" He said, "Man, you really want to know?" I said, "Yeah." Now, I don't recognize too many of y'all, but a couple of y'all done bought PCP up in Eastgate. Let the truth be told. Right? This would be a big green trash can in the first parking lot on the left-hand side. We went behind the big green dumpster. He rolled up a joint of PCP. He said, "Hit this." I hit that. All the fear left. It was no more searching for love. I found it. I went from, "I can't do this," to, "If you ain't got 10 straight, then you gonna get late. Give me 9 and you will be fine." That's the bottom line. And I the love that I was looking for. I found it. But the funny thing about addiction is that addiction will love you at first. And it'll turn on you in a way I had never seen. Because I had crossed paths with some people who were also searching for love in all the wrong places. And in my mind, I said, I didn't say it out loud yet, but in my mind, I said, I'll never be like that. I'll never let myself end up like that. So that kind of relates to this process, because the way that I got it, because I can relate to the 3 days going by waiting for the test results to come back. And I can relate to all the people that say, I love you, thanks for sharing, you just so spiritual. And when the time comes, the only thing I got to stand on is the one thing that carried me the whole time, and it ain't you. I can relate to that. I can relate to being powerless and seeing all the HIV commercials and sexually transmitted this and making my mind up that I'll never do that and do that inside of this process. But I think more than anything else, this process is designed to get me in touch with grace, mercy, and humility. Humility being just a realistic view of myself, and let the truth be told, at the right time, I might do just about anything in this search. Because at some point, let me share this, because we tend to kind of like feed off of insanity, you know. Nothing moves a meeting like how many dicks you sucked, or how many women you had, or how many pimps you were, you hoes, and nothing moves a meeting like that. But let me share this. There is no cure for the disease of addiction. But there is a spiritual solution. So at some point, I have to understand that in this process, I'm going to find what I'm looking for. The first step says, I'm powerless over my addiction. Meaning God, once I involve myself in it, I can't stop if I want to, because it feels good. And I'm a person that needs to feel good. My disease, when I smoke crack, I don't smoke so that I can feel good later on. I hit the pipe to feel good right now. I came into the program, y'all offered me a process that worked the exact opposite way of drug, meaning hurt first in here. This is a painful process, bro. This is a process in which the rubber gonna meet the road. Either you gonna be who you are, or you going up out of here. Gucci bag and all. Gucci bag and all. I stopped getting high the first time I was 19 years old. I came to the meeting. Y'all was talking about shooting dope. Somebody hollered out, Dottie's uptown. Somebody came behind him and talked about a dead body in the White Law. And I said, if I was 50 years old, shot a miss in my hand, I would get some help too. Y'all said, okay. You don't have to use even if you want to. And I said, bet. And I left, because in my mind I was indifferent. Wasn't like y'all. You know how you sit and you say, man, how she got kids by all them different people? She's a tramp. Or how that nigga done laid with them boys? He a faggy. And then I had to look at my story. Sex and love have always been confused, because I stumbled up on the porno magazines in the basement, because I found the naked movie hidden in the bottom of the closet, because I left my house because I ain't think the love I needed was in there. And the first connection I had in which I felt love, which was with my best friend, who was a boy. So I'm confused. When they having sex in the movie and she say, I love you. So I get that from you through sex. I can do that. That's what the process is. Some stops that I made in here that in hindsight, I thank God for them. I thank God for the wisdom that comes with knowing the difference today. So what happened was, man, I stopped getting high. And I looked at some literature, and y'all suggested that drugs was only a symptom. And right behind that, y'all said, well, look at the second step and come to believe. And y'all said, man, when you stop using, a vacuum is left. It's a hole in my gut. And because I don't understand what's really going on, I put anything in the hole. So the rent money went in the hole for a new pair of Timberlands. We're talking about searching for love in all the wrong places. There's a comfortability that comes with a in the same place at the same time. And last, but surely not least, there's a certain comfortability that comes with Murray, Sue, Jane, Monique, Monifa, Robin, Shaquita. There's a comfortability that comes with that. The reality is, I'm a user. And in this process, I'm going to use people. Because God has to show me the love you're looking for is not sitting next to you in the person of flesh. It's a spiritual program. The only thing the people gonna do is guide you to me. So I gotta use an inventory. I was at a meeting. And I heard a sister share something that I thought was so profound. She said that it's real easy to be in this program. Go to meetings. Talk to people. Pray sometimes. You know, give rides, make coffee. It's real easy to do all that. And just be working a program that looks a lot like N.A. I mean, you got all the basic ingredients of Narcotics Anonymous. But that ain't what it is. I mean, what you want, ibuprofen or you want Motrin? One's generic. They both seem to work the same way. But that hole got to be addressed. Because the only thing that fit in the hole is love. And if you come from a broken background, the only thing you can do is love a person as best you can till you learn something better. So I had to write it down. Took a chance, let my sponsor introduce me to me in five with the participation of a God that I understand. And it was right there, man, and I finally got a closer look at who I am. I'm a broken person. I'm hurt. I'm scared, angry, jealous, envious. People come and say, Sonny, I just envy you so much because you scared. Do you understand that envy is a defect? How you going to appreciate somebody when the starting point is a defect? As a result of that, man, I got to the sixth step and all hell broke loose. The drugs was gone, the addict showed up, and the humiliation that comes with practicing active addiction, just like when I was hitting the pipe, brought me closer to the solution than I had ever been. What I'm saying is everything that I found out that was wrong with me in this process are just the things that are right with me, they just out of context. See, God pull a trick on the disease of addiction. Because addiction had me through my defects, but my defects forced me closer to him. So I'm going to make a list of the people that I didn't hurt. I'm going to admit to them and I'm going to amend my behavior. I'm going to keep looking at myself every day, admitting when I'm wrong, and then I'm going to have a one-on-one discussion with the one thing I've been searching for the whole time. As a result of receiving the love, because the only way I can know if I got the love of my high power, I'm in the room with a guy, man. He's a He's an ex-client of mine. Well, two of them are. And in the field I work in, they kind of tell us that once a client, always a client. And I be thinking in my mind, do you have any idea what crack house I came out of? Do you know the directions these people gave me to keep me out of the crack house? So I can't deal with people like that. So to see him put effort into getting closer to me because he see the deposit I had, and to still sometimes get so consumed by fear to where I refuse to give it up because I've been looking for it for so long. When I get it, I want to keep it. But y'all say, man, the only way you keep this, you got to give it away. So to sit there with these addicts, sharing with them, man, that ain't no big eyes or little using. We recover one day at a time in Narcotics Anonymous. Inside the same process. 24 principles designed to get me as far away from self-centered fear as my God needs me to use me. I had a whole lot of wants, man, when I got here. You know, I wanted a car. Wanted a couple fine women. Yours, mine, it really didn't matter. Couple nice outfits. But the one thing I asked for is the main thing I've gotten, a working relationship with my high power. And today, man, only thing I do sometimes is stand in the blood. I stand in it. That's it. Because if the truth be told, without the mercy and the grace, I'm a dead man walking. Thanks for letting me share.